You know, that's my nature. My ass gets flat fast. You know? So, you know, I'm a half measures guy. That's what I like. So, but I still believe that I have that obligation to people. I think I shortchange people sometimes by not showing them what Alcoholics Anonymous really is, as opposed to what we want to think it is. We have a procedure that most areas, I think, in fact, now all areas use. It's our third legacy procedure to elect our delegate and our elected officers at the area level. This thing is fraught with all kinds of drama. And there's all kinds of people who would like to make that an electronic kind of election, you know, because it does go pretty slow if you've ever been involved in it. You know, lots of paper flying around and people counting out and little hash marks and, you know, and if you don't call the names out, you're in trouble. And, I mean, there's all these little peculiarities that you have to go through to do it. The process was developed so that we might eliminate, to some degree, popularity contests and arrive at, hopefully, the best candidate for the job. Does it work all the time? I don't know. Maybe, and maybe not. I think when we can get to the fifth ballot and then go ahead and go to the hat, I think sometimes that eliminates a lot of the contention. It's nobody's fault at that point. And we also have another principle that takes care of, it seems like, any problem that we have if we do file up in the third legacy, and that's a two-year rotation on most of these jobs. And rotation does take care of a lot of problems. So, took care of my problem pretty well. It's important to remember, too, that GSRs pick the committee members. And that the committee members that they select, the DCMs and alternate DCMs that they connect, that they select, are key players in the area committee. And the area committee works very much like, as we discussed earlier, very much like the trustees committees and the trustees, the board of trustees for the General Service Conference. In most areas, the area committee is actually does the nuts and bolts work, and the assembly pretty much just kind of gives them some oversight and some custodianship and some, you know, maybe give them some input if the area committee gets to be a hung jury. So this business of picking DCMs is a vital deal too. We forget sometimes it's not more than about 2 or 4 years out after a DCM is selected that they're on the slate to be a delegate. And so it's generally from the ranks of the district committee members, that's where the delegates get selected from. So it's important that we get people that are not willing to just say, well, you know, yeah, sure, I'll do the job, and then they show up for one district meeting, and then they decide they're going to go to their house because their toys don't work. Mm-hmm. You know, that don't work at this level. So we need to try to get people that have got some demonstrated business of starting and finishing a job, and that they're doing what they say they're going to do. So anyway, that's just some thoughts on some of this stuff as far as leadership goes in the A.
Bill pretty well defined an AA leader as someone who can motivate people in such a way that they want to get the job done. I learned my skills in the penitentiary dish room to try to illustrate what I'm talking about. I worked in the dish room the whole time I was there because they weren't sending me anywhere. I still owed the federal government 5 years. They just kept me contained. And so along the way, because I had been there a while, there are two inmates that become inmate bosses, if you will, the people who have to lead the team. And I didn't want the job. There's nothing worse than being a con boss. But my sponsor said I didn't have any choice. I'd been asked to do it. So you need, now you've learned to work. Now you need to learn how to help other people learn to work. Was his kind of attitude. Anyway, the upshot of the whole thing was that during that process, I learned how to get cooperation out of people over whom I have no authority. That's what an AA leader is, a person who has developed a knack of getting cooperation from people over whom they have no authority. That's real leadership. In essence, an AA leader has to either have walked down the path ahead of the rest of us, or at least seen down the path ahead of the rest of us, and encourage us to go this way. Okay? And for me, the main thing is I will walk the path first. Then I'll come back and tell you what I found down there. There will be times that I will lie to you. If it's necessary to get you to go down the path. There won't be serious lies. I think a good leader has developed, I have, developed a knack of the proper use of guilt. Wonderful tool. I'll talk a little about process, having been to the conference process for electing our leaders. Let's talk about trustee elections. We have two kinds. We have non-alcoholic and we have alcoholic trustees. The non-alcoholic trustees are friends of ours and are generally picked from among those of us who are there and know these people, have been around. They're invited into the conference. The nominating committee, they send a resume, the nominating committee talks with them. They spend a weekend with us. This is a Thursday through Sunday deal at the conference. So we all get an opportunity, because we, being the trustees, are the voting members that elect trustees. We need to know who we're getting a hold of. And we check them out. Non-alcoholic trustees are very important to our fellowship. Very important. They don't think like we do, which time and again has saved our bacon. Okay. If for no other reason that they don't think like I do, it causes me to think. Everybody agrees with me. I don't have to think. I just have to have a little script. They create a creative tension. They do not understand us. They don't see how we've managed to survive as long as we have. And if you look at our history, you'll wonder too. They have very clear ideas of how to run a business, and we don't run a business that way. Almost without exception, our non-alcoholic trustees, first thing they do is try to find a way to consolidate all of the authority in AA into one person. That's how they operate in that world. Well, we must never allow that to happen. So we have creative tension, and it's the tension between those that allows the creative process to occur. Sometimes it's fighting and then it's unhealthy, but tension is good. Controversy is the lifeblood of AA service. We don't want it to slop out into the world. It really is. I've come to love chaos. It's only through chaos that I learn what needs to be put in order. Now, I have no tolerance for chaos, so I will try to put it in order very quickly. But if there isn't any going on, if you'll notice your good AA leaders, watch them. They do something. They create chaos. They create controversy. You're a good leader. Because a good leader, rather than making declarations, a good AA leader has learned how to ask good questions. Inflammatory questions. This says we do it this way. Will somebody please explain to me, because I'm too stupid to get it, why we're doing it this way? That has saved my life over and over again. I've got scars from it, but it saved my life. Why are we doing this? Somebody explain this to me, please. I don't get it. So that our Class B or Class A trustees, our non-alcoholic trustees, are then elected by the trustees at the conference. And all trustee positions, except the non-alcoholics, they get 3-year positions. All trustee positions are 1 year, 4 times in a row. So it's a 4-year job, but they have to be reelected each year by themselves. So it's a pretty safe bet. There is currently a movement to suggest with the regional trustees that the regions elect them, not the trustees in the conference. And it's worthy of some consideration and debate. A situation developed with a trustee who hadn't been around for a while, because the trustee elections are done. You guys put my name. demand of my service experience, and that's all the people back there knew, because by process, a delegate cannot stand for trustee until they've been rotated a minimum of 2 years. So they got no buddies on the board. Okay, it just clears the politics out of it, pretty much. And almost all those resumes look the same. And there's a certain progression through the service structure that gets you to the place where you got a resume or a recommendation for a trustee. You've been on area committees, ECM, GSR, delegate. The chance of becoming an alcoholic trustee and not having been a delegate are slim today. There was a time when there were four of them that didn't have to be, our general service trustees. So of those 14 then, on a prescribed rotation, odd years, we elect regional trustees, one trustee for each region in the U.S. and Canada, and two trustees at large, one from Canada and one from the United States, and four general service trustees. They used to be called in-town trustees because they all lived in New York, which is what proved to be one of the problems, and it has since been solved. So my name went in. And I got to tell you the truth, I just flat forgot it. I do not have an image of me today as a trustee. I'm not trustee material, but I was a good one because I'm not trustee material. Okay? I don't fit that image. Well, son of a bitch, buy a suit for the trustee only. You mean you can't wear sport coats all the time? No. Anyway. I'd completely forgotten about my business, because the odds, David Aronofsky was from our region and he was the current trustee at large, and the chances of two people coming out of the same region are impossibly high anyway. And I'm not mature. Anyway, I forgot it. And I was home from work one day and the phone rang and it was Ed Price. And he says, "Well, you're it." And I had no idea what he was talking about. And then he told me, and my heart stopped. Because that's a pretty massive undertaking. My wife and I had talked it over. I've said yes to every AA request up to that point. If you're even considering this, don't stand for it. And if you do, understand your life is over for 4 years. You belong to Alcoholics Anonymous. Every weekend, many times during the week, I had to learn to read. The volume of correspondence is unbelievable. It's a non-paid position, by the way. Only your expenses are paid. And they do insist that every expense, including 28 cents a mile from home to the airport, is paid. I rebelled at that, and I was told, no, all expenses, there may be a guy come along that would make a good trustee that can't afford it to do that. He's 150 miles from the airport. We don't want to do that. So I learned a lesson from that. But the process was interesting because there were, I remember, seven or eight of us. Were you there, Tommy? You weren't there then, no. At that time. And we went through the third legacy procedure and it narrowed down to two, myself and a guy named Al from Michigan. And we went into another ballot and there was still no clear majority. There has to be a clear majority, two-thirds. And it was clear there wasn't going to be either. Neither one of us would ever come up with two-thirds, so we went to the hat. And the reason I got comfortable with the position is that they didn't draw my name out of the hat. He drew both names out of the hat and then dropped one of them back in. Almost all trustee elections I attended came out of the hat. There's so little politics there, it'd scare you. So little. But one of the problems, and one of the reasons they're talking now about possibly having regions do their own elections, is there is an area that has a trustee now who hadn't been around for 20 years, hardly, and is in early onset Alzheimer's, doesn't remember much. Very hard for her to serve. It's a sad thing. And because nobody at the conference knew that, she was lucky. And now everybody's trying to help, of course, but it was an inappropriate. And the solution, one solution is let's consider having the regions do their own trustee election. Now, I see a lot of benefits in that beyond what we just talked about. That really is going to kill some more politics because nobody on the board's got buddies coming. The rebels out here, the troublemakers, are going to send them troublemakers. And that's what AA needs up there, is troublemakers. Somebody always asking questions. Why are we doing this? That's the main question. Why are we? Is this even worth doing? Does this serve the purpose and the principle of Alcoholics Anonymous? If not, I don't care how good it looks, let's quit doing it. Okay, let somebody else do it. I'm delighted with this rip-off big book out of New York. Absolutely delighted with it. The one that has margin, place for margin notes and concordances and all. Wonderful. That means we don't have to bother with it. If you want one of those, I'll give you the address. We don't have to bother with it. We ought not get tangled up in all that fancy stuff. Mine's just fine. Okay? The window shade. Jesus, what a waste of time that was. Let's let somebody else do that. And then if you want one, buy one. Okay. The leadership thing. I want to go back to the Russian thing because this came into play a whole lot for us in that whole operation. Not just the Russian trip. One of the things that we were faced with was all the Russians really needed after our trip, and we knew it, was a big book. At the time, our policy was, in essence, you're from some country where AA is developing. As soon as you've gotten big enough and strong enough to have your own publishing operation, we'll grant you the right to publish the book. What we're saying is, as soon as you're big enough to publish the book, we'll let you have the book that teaches you how to get big enough to publish the book. It was cattywampus. So one of the policy changes we made at that time, based on the Russians that has helped everybody, is that we now have a number of translations in place in manuscript form for any country that's developing. We've got it ready for them. And we're doing the translations because with the Russian book, there was a group of well-meaning AA members who thought we were moving too slow. Needed to get it in there right away, and so they started taking in a mimeograph translation of the big book. We had to make a trip to San Francisco to talk with them and ask them to please not do that. The translation, for instance, the 12 steps translated into the 12 commandments, and there were all kinds of... The translating English into Russian is a very touchy deal. In fact, with any language. Bill wrote in New England American. I remember reading the book to a bunch over at Buena Vista one time, and some kid said, "That was really nice poetry, but what the hell did he say? I didn't understand a word of it." Okay. So we established another policy, and even though we don't hold the copyright to the material, we want to check all the translations. Now, we still hold the copyright in Canada and in other countries. In fact, we're in some serious litigation with Germany right now because we've got a lunatic we told no who's doing it anyway. That's a short form, right?
Yeah.
We ran into trouble in Mexico. They ended up with two general service offices. And one said cease and desist, and when you say cease and desist in Mexico, they went in and arrested everybody and locked the place down. Lots of controversy over that one. Don't even worry about it. But we established some policies. We wanted the Russians to get a big book, but it had to be a big book. The integrity of the message is clearly important. And well-meaning people can screw that up, meaning me and people like me. So we've got one. The introduction to the Russian Big Book is some of the finest writing I have ever read. If you want a clear picture, because they covered the God angle in the introduction in a way that I've never heard it any better. And it was done by a young English teacher named Julia, who was starting AA in Russia. We didn't start it. She was there. She put IA together wherever she was, and she was translating the book as she was. And then we check it. One of the things we do, if you are translating a book, please do that. And then please send it to us, and we have other translating bureau who will help check it against the integrity of what we're trying to say. And we'll all work together and we'll get this big book out. How many do we have? I know we got 14 on the shelf last time I checked, plus the one, there's 14 or 15 more that are already in print, including Tagali and Russian,
Latvian,
Polish. God, you love the Poles. The Poles were just like us. They grabbed this thing and ran. They were holding a general service conference where there's still police on the street. They didn't care. Wonderful people. But this is the kind of leadership. We need people who are willing to step into that arena. That's a strange arena. I got to sit opposite the head of the Russian Politburo's Bureau of Propaganda. Well, he told us they didn't need A. Yeah. You should see this man. His name's Chernik. He's about 5'2" with a big shock of white hair. And he's one of those charismatic people that when you walk in the room, he's 7 feet tall in every direction. And whatever he says, somebody moves and gets it done. I'm not intimidated by people like that. I'm just not. I like them. I don't understand what the hell I'm doing there, but you know, they're not intimidating at all. They're going to get it done, and I understand that. But I want to find out what it is they want done. Okay, so I let them talk. He sent us to one of his deputies, who interrogated us for an hour and a half. If you're going to pick leaders, you got to pick somebody who doesn't mind being interrogated by the KGB for an hour and a half. Okay, that's really what it came down to. He's sitting there, and there's another little guy sitting in a chair over there like this. And it's clear that he's listening to make sure the right questions get asked and what the answers are going to be. Well, I've been interrogated before. And we had nothing to hide. We just answered his questions. But if you're going to pick leaders, you need people who are willing to at least... I didn't know when I became trustee at large that the KGB was going to get me. Adaptable people. We were at a fellow wrote a book about Alcoholics Anonymous, a Russian that was very pro-AA, Russian doctor. And their procedure over there, because it sold out 50,000 copies immediately, they have a serious alcoholism problem. They were interested. The procedure is, and they have a public meeting. There were 400 or 500 people in this auditorium critiquing the book. Professionals, street people, everybody. And we were invited to come to that. And the fellow who said we will not support AA was there, and he'd said that on Friday, and this was a Tuesday, and now they were willing to support AA. We found out later what had happened is Mr. Gorbachev said, whatever it is you're doing isn't working. You better find something that does work or you're fired. And we just happened to be in Moscow at the time, so we were invited over. But in that meeting, when we were finally asked to come to the microphone, this question was asked. How do you think, Mr. American, how do you think that Alcoholics Anonymous will work in the Soviet Union? Now, there's the hook question. Okay. The response is very simple. I don't know. It would be presumptuous of me to even take a guess. I've only been here 13 days. And that was the right answer. Okay. I'm an AA leader. Okay. I try to set my own opinion aside. And it wasn't just me. This whole team, you'd have been proud of them, set aside personalities and personal agendas in order to be available to the information that had to go out and the people we were going to deal with. That's what you're looking for. When you send a GSR to the assembly, you know there's going to be some hassle going on there. You need to send somebody who can make themselves available to the chaos and not cave in and not set their own fires. Okay? That's not Joel. Let's make him GSR because you haven't been here for 3 weeks. Don't send him, please, because he'll come back and tell you that's a bunch of shit and you're out of the game. If he goes at all. If you're going to enter service at the trustee level, you must have lots of time, lots of patience, and a high tolerance for pain. Psychic pain, emotional pain, I promise you, if you think as a GSR you're not appreciated, see a trustee someday. You're actively unappreciated. I used to come on to those meetings just beaten battered. Thank God my wife's a nurse. She knows more about the traditions than we do. She had to learn to keep me in line. But there's also a great joy in that kind of thing. A guy who's out front, who goes down the path a little ways first, is the first one to see it happen, to discover it. I got to experience what AA was like at the beginning, because I was there at the beginning in the Soviet Union. We got to participate with them. I got a letter back from this one young kid that I sponsored by mail about, I don't know, 8-10 weeks after we'd been there. He said, there's been a division. There was some disagreement with the leadership of the Moscow Beginners Group, so we had to leave it and start 2 more meetings. All it takes is a couple of resentments and a pot of hot tea. This is the kind of thing that Bill used to do. Remember, he went all over the world. Took some trips. He sent Eve Marsh around. But that leadership now has had to come to the trustees. This is outside the coat and tie stuff. We have other trustees who went to Mexico. The trustees are responsible for the World Service meeting. I don't know if you've even heard of it. Every 2 years, any country that has either a publishing operation or its own general service office. Because our General Service Office only serves the United States and Canada. That's all it's supposed to serve. By consensus of the World Service meeting, we are the conduit of information for everybody. But we're not Big Brother. We just have some experience and some great archives. So they've kind of said, okay, you can do that for us. But every 2 years, all of these delegates get together somewhere. Alternating years is in New York, and then it's picked from around the country. We've been to Munich and Guatemala and New Zealand. Meet for 6 days with only one agenda. It's the only true AA service meeting that exists. It has only one purpose. How can we all better carry the message? It makes no decisions except concerning its own activities. No edicts, no nothing. It's a grand thing to be part of that. At the World Service meeting in New York, as we established our purpose, that our purpose was to meet for 6 days to find better ways to carry the message, one of the delegates from Mexico got up and said, first, I think we better ask ourselves what message is it we're carrying. We set the tone for that meeting, which was incredible, because we really did have to discover what is the message we're carrying. And then it was my responsibility to come back and tell this little story so that you'll ask yourself the same question. I've been down that road, and now I've come back and ask you to ask yourself, if we're going to carry the message, what message are we carrying? Good question. And that's what leadership does. It goes down the road and comes back and tells you what it found out there. Don't go down that road. There's a 500-pound gorilla down there. I know. I went down that road. Big some bitch. Oh, that. This thing is real. It's not words on paper. Leader, don't be afraid of leadership. There's a the hell we don't. We better have, and they better be extraordinary people. They don't have to be giants or big eagle things, but they must be extraordinary. Ordinary people are not willing to be interrogated by the KGB. You got to have some lunatic. By the way, just as a sidebar, the interpreter that went with us on that trip will be in Denver next Monday for about 4 or 5 days. Remarkable man. Non-alcoholic. He loves AA enough that he put his own life on the line for us to carry us through this trip. And if anybody in the area would like to meet him, just give me a call. He'd love to see you.
Thank you. All right, do we have any questions or on this concept, man?
Good afternoon, Jim. And first, let me preface this by saying this question has nothing to do with my current home group. However, in some groups that I've been part of in the past, there's been the occasional problem of, as you alluded to, people who get voted into trusted positions of trusted servant. Not always just by the AA draft, but sometimes they stand for it. And a few months down the road, they're just not doing the job. And just, what's some guidance or experience that you may have had with dealing with that situation, since, again, the current set of leadership in my home group is excellent right now. I'm sure at some point, in the future, I'll see that problem arise again. Some experience on handling this sort of problem at the group level.
We've done it right and we've done it wrong. We've been mean-spirited at one point and just kicked them out. Very bad way to go about it. The most successful I've seen, we've only done this twice. One of the fellows got very sick and was simply unable, and everybody loved him and didn't want to hurt his feelings, but eventually we just went and talked with him and said, could we do this? Can we have somebody else doing the work until you get better? And then we can start it over again, because it isn't fair to you or to us. And I know it's a drain on you, because you want to do it and you can't. And by doing it essentially that way, it worked out fine for everybody. But that's a tough one. But the first tradition clearly makes the statement, the welfare of the group must come first. And so if somebody's not doing the job, the welfare of the group must come first. And we must find a loving way to deal with it. But it has to serve the group.
Hi, I'm Dottie, alcoholic. Would you just tell us a little bit more? This is curiosity, but I'd like to know a little bit more about the non-alcoholic trustees, how we troll for them, where they come from, and why they're doing this, I'd like to, we read a lot about the trustees, okay, we can find out about them, but how about those non-alcoholic trustees?
If you'll come up here next weekend, you'll meet the cream of the crop, and he'll be able to answer that question for you by his very presence. Most of them love us more than we do. The ones I've met, with a few exceptions, are dedicated people. Dr. Jack Norris, giant of a man, stood 4'6". They want Alcoholics Anonymous to go forward. Where do we troll for them? From among our friends. I get around the country a lot, and I meet a lot of these people, and I make those suggestions. And we're constantly recruiting good non-alcoholic trustees. We need their perspective. We need their connections. And we need their guidance quite often. And we also need to educate them. They love AA and want it to go right. We got to tell them what that really means. There's an inclination among non-alcoholics to want to fix things. Well, that's just their nature. And we don't need fixed. We're not broken. We're just screwy. Okay. Please, if you get a chance, come up here and meet Jim Estelle. He is the epitome of our Class A trustees. And You want me to get a better answer than just meeting Jim?
Yeah. Juanita, I'm an alcoholic. February 93. One of the things that I've heard a lot here in this group this weekend is how different, diversified, opinionated, and how differently we do things and how much we want everyone to do it our way. And so in so many different groups that we come from, and here we are trying to carry the message. And I heard you loud and clear when you said, if we're going to carry the message, what message are we carrying? So I'd like you to give me a little bit of what you think that message that was discussed, like you said, these, and I'm not as knowledgeable yet, but you just said that there was a particular group that just does that. I mean, they look at, and that is, of course, essential, because we talked a little bit about, talked with you on one-on-one about how we kill people. We kill alcoholics and we kill non-alcoholics. And I think that's contingent probably on the message that I carry. So can you give us a little bit of...
Yeah, at the World Service meeting, some of the very tangible things are literature. What literature is needed? What's needed in Los Angeles may not be needed in Biloxi, Mississippi, or in Mexico City, or in Sri Lanka. So that's part of the discussions that go on there, is what is appropriate literature. You need to understand, they can write their own literature if they want to. We don't have any locks on that kind of stuff. If they're going to translate our literature, we would like to be involved in that process. Some of the things that came out of that, the AA message is one of recovery from alcoholism, of course. And a lot of discussion was around that. The best description of that is in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's what recovery from alcoholism means. One of the reasons AA proliferated from the very beginning was the restoration of family. However you want to look at that, it was the restoration of family that made us world famous. We either put together old families or build new families. That has all kinds of dimension. I'm a member of my community family. I go back to work. I have the bedevilments are turned upside down, if you will. The message is you can live a decent life that makes sense to you. How do we carry that? Well, in the way we walk and talk, and we discussed all that. If I try to define our message in terms of results, the fellows in Guadalajara isn't going to hear me, because my outer circumstances are a house and a Dodge Caravan and that kind of thing. They're not going to hear that. I have to find a clearer way to describe that. Whatever that means to him, I must communicate the same thing. How do we communicate that? Well, those folks in South America know more about family than we're ever going to know. We got to Guatemala City for that meeting, and every one of us from around the world was met by a group of five or six Guatemalans. The entire AA community became a host committee. They met us. They made sure we were safe and comfortable, because there were still soldiers on the streets with guns in Guatemala City at the time. They took us to their own meetings, but they mainly just hosted us. This one guy was real cute. He said, "I have learned enough English to welcome you." And that's all he knew. That was it. It was over. But he had learned that. Our Japanese delegate learned English because my wife and I were asked to go to Japan for their 15th anniversary to talk about general service. She learned English so she could host us. Anybody here wanting to do that? Now, as a result of that, she became the delegate to the World Service meeting from Japan. Lovely lady. We're still in touch. And that meeting, those are the kinds of things that get discussed and demonstrated. We begin to see it's more than my little Fort Bragg group or my little Denver group or There's a lot more going on here than I need to learn. What is our message? It's in the way we live. And how do I communicate that effectively?
To follow up on that last question, I happen to have spent a considerable period of time in sobriety in South Korea and a couple of other Asian countries. One thing I noticed while I was there was that there tended to be two AAs operating in a number of those countries, particularly the ones where English wasn't a commonly spoken language. There was the international AA, if you will, which was mostly Americans, Europeans, having their own set of meetings, most of which are listed in the international directory. And then whatever local AA, you know, was beginning to form. I had a couple of friends in the program who happened to be fluent in Korean and would occasionally attend those, and so there was beginning to be some back and forth in the case of Korea. They also had, just as a way of helping to address this concern, a convention, international convention in Korea, where they had meetings for Koreans as well as the English speaking. I'm just interested if you've seen anything at the World Service level that is addressing that problem. I've got the impression that it's not just in Asia, but throughout the world that kind of a model has developed, and what may be going on to just have more cooperation between the international, you know, English-speaking AA and the more indigenous AAs.
That's not something General Service should ever address, ever. That's up to you and I, entirely.
Okay.
So far, we've held to that. We can share. We went to the Moscow Beginners Group. They'd already been there a year. They were delighted we were there. We learned from them. They learned from us. But their method is, what they do is what they do. We have no input into it whatsoever. It's up to you and I. If we carry any message at all this weekend, if I do, that's the one. That first concept must come to life. We are responsible entirely for whatever is happening or will happen to Alcoholics Anonymous. I am personally responsible. If GSO should, for some reason, shut down, I really won't care. I have 10 extra big books and a big mouth. And a never-ending supply of drunks. And among them is somebody who will insist on handwriting the 11th book. I would just assume GSO didn't shut down, but I'm responsible whether it stays alive or doesn't, and it doesn't matter whether it does or not. The Australians, God, they're fun. The very first thing they did was put their own big book together. You Yanks do it one way, we do it another. And they were very adamant about that. Don't bring that Yankee shit down here. Same book. Got some Australian stories in it. And they've got this lovely fake leather cover on it. It's a classic book. But we get along with them just fine. We interact just fine. But,
The others.
What do you say we take about 10 minutes? Just as a point of announcement, it is... Get cracked up here, huh, Shelly? Okay, concept 10. Every service responsibility should be matched by an equal service authority. The scope of such authority to be always well defined by tradition, by resolution, by specific job description, or by appropriate charters and bylaws. Most general service positions in the structure, up to and including the delegates, or down to and including the delegates, whichever way you want to look at it, exist by force of tradition. There really isn't anything legally binding a group to have a coffee maker. And most groups by tradition have one. And the scope of that job and the responsibilities that they do is defined generally by each group. But they're pretty common. Make the coffee, get here early, you know, that kind of stuff. And when that don't happen, of course, if we don't give them the resources, say, well, make the coffee, but we don't give them no coffee or a coffee pot or water, well, you know, you ain't going to have no coffee. That's just kind of how the cow ate the cabbage. So, I mean, a lot of this stuff just kind of nuts and bolts stuff, really, when you start looking at it, you know, at a level other than from trying to carve it out of these essays. So when you start getting into this business of, like, the trustees themselves, they have a legal responsibility, and their job is taken care of through the bylaws, and also it's also a traditional role. So it's at that level or point that you start crossing the invisible line between traditional authority and legal authority. Most of our staff members, in fact, I think now all of our staff members, paid staff members, have a specific job description, and so their authority is and responsibility is pretty well set forth in those job descriptions. We have a charter, the conference. We also have articles of incorporation, the bylaws for each of the corporations and the General Service Board, and those deal primarily with a lot of the specifics as it relates to this particular concept. I think Bill basically was just trying to set forth the idea here that in a kind of a general way to say that if you're gonna give somebody authority. A service authority. There is a service responsibility that is the flip side of that coin. And the trick is to try to match it up.
Yeah, this one doesn't even need a whole lot of explanation. But it does need continually redefined sometimes. When I went on the board as trustee at large, the basic job description of trustee at large is here. The job duties were not clear. I came on at a time when things were escalating. One of the things a trustee at large does is if your regional trustee dies or for whatever reason can't serve, the trustee at large will fill in until the next rotation. It became clear to us with regional forums, which was Dr. Jack Norris's idea. He began to see there was a we-they thing going on in AA. So he's a non-alcoholic trustee. He helped establish the regional forum, which is simply, since you can't come to them, they come to you. Staff members, trustees, hold a weekend while you find out just who they are and what they're doing, put faces on the phone numbers that you call from time to time, and make you challenges as needed. Well, it became clear that one of the things the trustee at large could do was attend all regional forums. And then report back to the board. It's a two-way street here, because not all the trustees go to those things. So that became part of the job description, that the trustee at large would go to every forum. Lots of discussion about that. There's one extra expense, one extra person. What are we going to do with them when we get them there? All that stuff goes on. Which committees should the trustees serve on? It has to be fairly well defined. A trustee at large should not be on any of the boards. That was pretty clear. Maybe off in Russia somewhere. Maybe off in Texas somewhere when there's a board meeting going on. You need one of the regional trustees who's more at hand for the board. So I never served on any of the corporate boards. I served on the committees. That's really simple. It just all comes from that. Everything's well defined here. If you need those definitions, they're here. But understand they all flex and flow, too.
One of the things we talked about early on in this thing, remember way back in ancient history when we first started this meeting? we were going to talk about this group conscience, you know, and how this thing evolved and what it really is. And there's a little bit at the end of this particular concept talks about the difference between a delegated authority and the ultimate authority, the ultimate authority, of course, being the letter. Then we start getting into this business of delegated authority, and the truth of the matter is that one cannot exist without the other. So probably if we're having problems with God revealing himself through our group conscience, one of the problems might be that we're improperly using or not matching up responsibility in this business of delegated authority. Are we, in fact, delegating authority and responsibility for people to take care of some things for us? So this is the kind of stuff that, like Don said, always needs to be looked at. And this is part of the purpose of what a group inventory might help to solve, too. So if there's no questions on this particular one, we'll go on to concept 11 here.
Could you give a more concrete example of
what
that point?
Well, it's very simply this. For example, if our group is our group a meddling group? Is our group one of these that likes to be lawyering on procedure guides, dotting T's, crossing I's, and all that stuff? Are we one of these that does not trust our trusted servants to handle responsibility for us? Perhaps it's a GSR. Do we believe as a group that we need to send our GSR and two or three corner men to the district meeting to make sure the GSR kind of stands up and tells it like we want to hear? That kind of thing, and it happens. That kind of stuff happens. In other words, we're not delegating really that authority. We've just got some kind of puppet that we've got stringing along down here, and we're instructing them and telling them, you do this, you do that. And the GSR maybe is not a service leader. Maybe they're just a messenger. And the world's full of messengers. So how is God going to reveal himself in a group conscience when that kind of activity is going on? Be a little difficult because it's going to get overwhelmed by the lack of delegated authority. Okay, concept 11.
Do you understand that? One little comment. Okay. If we are delegating authority to them, that means we have the authority. Don't be lazy. The only place they get power is from us. And if we don't delegate that to them and tell them what to do with it, shame on us, not shame on them. You got to trust them. You also have to instruct them.
When I was Lynn alcoholic, I won't be too long, and I think it's pretty self-evident. But when I was a DCM, I went out for coffee. I went to different meetings and. I stand there, and not stand there, but I just say when I shared, I'm the DCM for this part of the district, and if you'd like anything from the district, please come and talk to me after the meeting, and I'd stand some meetings by myself, and that was okay, but I went out for coffee after one meeting, and a couple of the people proceeded to absolutely, like, pull the rug out from underneath my feet, and as far as doing that non-constructive criticism of the district, and these were people who I'd never seen at a district meeting, and I wasn't capable really of receiving that criticism at the time. I mean, I didn't do my usual in their face, but I don't know how to shift, so I just started crying. And at the same time, in my mind is starting. I could visually starting to question every person who had ever been of service to me in a service example. Oh, they were just. I mean, it was really psychedelic. But it was, yeah, I know, but and I know that really the only proper response would have been, and I think I did say, come to the meeting. They never did show up, but there's no way really to address that otherwise, is there? I don't.
You know what a pit rider is?
No.
Any of you that ever rode a bucking horse or anything in a rodeo,
there's always in the background behind the cages where they keep the animals, there's always two or three guys walking around with painted on casts and stuff. And you ask them, you say, what's your story? And they say, well, I got hurt last week, you know, and they never been on a bucking horse ever. But they'll tell you how to ride that bucking horse and how to get on the bucking bow and how to rope and how to do it there, and they know it all, but they never done it. See? I call those people pit riders. All right, concept 11. While the trustees hold final responsibility for AA's World Service Administration, they should always have the assistance of the best possible standing committees, corporate service directors, executive staffs, and consultants. Therefore, the composition of these underlying committees and service boards, the personal qualifications of their members, the manner of their induction into service, the systems of their rotation, the way in which they relate to each other, the special rights and duties of our executives, staff, and consultants, together with the proper basis for the financial compensation of these special workers, will always be matters for serious care and concern. Sets out the different operating committees of the board, nominating committee, budget, finance, public information committee, literature committee, general policy committee, et cetera. These things go on, and this thing changes a little bit as time goes on, at the actual composition of it. But in my mind, what I think he's trying to do here is to tie this all together into a nice package, to provide for a continuum of all these things, and to show how they do. The particular importance to me has always been the interrelationship between them, and how they work together towards the ostensibly at least the common good. So the essay in this thing just goes on and on and on and on. I'm quite sure Don has some comments on the practical application of it all, at least from that level. I know that this thing was never, or this part of it at least, was never really a bone of contention when I was a delegate to the conference. This thing had been operating for some number of years pretty smoothly most of the time. But I did also recognize that as a delegate, I had a responsibility to be in a kind of an oversight position with respect to this. And so as a result of that, we would have to sit down and take a look at how they were doing it. And we depended a lot at that time on the contributions made by the staff, made by the different service directors that they had at that time. And they would tell us, you know, that if things were going okay or not, and you have to kind of believe that, you know, if they had a problem, they would at least report it or make some noise. So I don't know, Don, do you have some things on this?
Well, I served on the Public Information Committee. I don't know anything about advertising and things like that. So we brought in consultants from radio, from TV, from advertising. They were part of our consultants on that board. We want to do a little public information piece 1 minute to go out. How do we go about that? I'm now responsible for spending $8 million of your money. And I'm just a country boy. I need somebody to tell me, what are the costs going to be here? How do you go about it? How much time is going to be involved in this? I don't know how long it takes to produce a video. Don't have a clue. So we would have consultants come in who knew what the procedures were and could help us wade through that minefield. That was very important. We don't make a decision on the committee as to whether to make a video or not, but we must implement the conference request that we do so, or action that we do so. On the corrections committee, we had people from corrections on the committee. That's a touchy one, because each state, each community, each warden has their own autonomy. But there are some basic principles. This is also one of the places we do our recruiting. We bring people like Jim Estill onto the committee as advisors and directors, and they help us, and we get to realize we can use this person in a greater dimension, and they become trustees then. That's all that is. We are smart enough to know that we're not smart enough to know most of the time. We need some help. And we get them. That PI committee was fun, by the way. This was the most radical bunch of people I've ever seen. They were advertising people. They were lunatics. And some of them were even drunks. Yelling and screaming. Wow, it was wonderful.
Okay, concept 12. Bet you thought you'd never see this, huh? Concept 12, general warranties of the conference. This is the warranties. And these warranties are also contained in the conference charter, too. But
these, by the way, can't be changed. The rest of them can.
Okay. General warranties of the conference. In all its proceedings, the General Service Conference shall observe the spirit of AA tradition, taking care that the conference never becomes the seat of perilous wealth or power. That sufficient operating funds plus an ample reserve be its prudent financial principle, that none of the conference members shall ever be placed in a position of unqualified authority over any of the others, that all important decisions be reached by discussion, vote, whenever possible, by substantial unanimity, that no conference action ever be personally punitive or an incitement to public controversy, that though the conference may act for the service of Alcoholics Anonymous, it shall never perform any acts of government. And that, like the Society of Alcoholics Anonymous, which it serves, the conference itself will always remain democratic in thought and action. Now, these are the things that Bill Basic, Bill, well, and Dr. Bob in absentia, too, because this is, the general principles here had already been outlined. But this is what they promised us if we would let them go as the co-founders. And he said that this conference, which, if we recall our earlier meeting, was basically an experimental proposition from 1951 to 54. If this conference would be allowed to just go ahead and move forward in this direction, that these are the things that it would never do. And in my experience, and just in the reading of the past actions and everything, it seems like whenever we start kissing the doorknob of coming into compromise with these traditions, that's when the biggest fights occur. And I know that when I was a delegate, round 5, which is the one about public controversy, was just, I mean, there was 140-some-odd voting members of that conference that year, and there was 145 ideas about what's a public controversy. And on the one hand, we had a situation in this regard. Actually, it started out with Chips and ended up to be the whole circle and triangle deal. But we had actually initiated litigation at that point against a chip manufacturer who had refused to honor the cease and desist to stop using the circle and triangle on his chips. And, of course, during discovery, they discovered that we had put a bunch of numbers out regarding, what kind of orders had been submitted by AA groups and blah, blah, blah. And they discovered that they were going to have to produce for discovery purposes the names of every GSR for 10 years from every AA group. And that's obviously an anonymity problem because this stuff, in the event it would have gone to trial, would have certainly ended up at the public level in the form of, people don't realize, but a lot of court proceedings, and in fact most at the district court level, are public record. Anybody can go in and find it. So we couldn't even, in that particular instance, continue with litigation. And we were stuck. And what we had done by the very fact of filing this lawsuit was we had put Alcoholics Anonymous in a position of a public controversy. And this, because of the fact that this individual who refused to stop manufacturing the chips was an AA member, we had taken an action that was personally punitive. So it was a real sticky wicket, and as has been mentioned earlier, George and I think the conference at that time, and certainly the trustees, found the wherewithal to find a nice way out of this thing. And the conference turned right around and said, and told the board that you must not sue anybody, and we gave them basically a directive that was illegal. And the board kept insisting from the floor, do not make this recommendation. And, of course, people were saying, why not? You tell me do not, I'm going to. And they just wouldn't leave it alone. Well, thankfully, it came up as a floor action,
And it was a hung jury. It didn't fly because enough of the people got the idea that what we were doing was basically telling the board, you're doing something illegal. We were really severely hampering the trustees because we were putting them in a position of being forced to dilute the corporation. And if we did that, then that's when we discovered, hey, we have no director's insurance.
Oh my God.
On and on, you know, there it goes. But these warranties, and people ask me all the time, they want you to be the AA police. We have this member who, blah, blah, blah. We want to kick him out of the group. Can we kick him out of the group? Now, I know another guy who thinks that, yeah, you can kick anybody out of a group. And, you know, I'm not gonna be the arbiter of that particular deal. It says, if you look in this warranty, it says that to get anybody out of AA as a whole would take a 3/4 vote of all the registered groups in the world. Now, I don't know whether that's even possible to do. I don't know how that would even happen. I know there's a procedure in place to do it. But what we would, if we wanted to kick somebody out of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole, we'd be having to change one of these warranties. And to change a warranty would require the 3/4 vote of all the registered groups in the world as of the date of the first of the month immediately following the date of the action. So if it was happening at a conference, it would probably be May 1st. They have 6 months to poll all the groups. How are you even going to find them? And it's got to be 3/4. It's got to be 3/4. I don't think it's ever going to happen. Whether or not somebody can boot somebody out of the group, I think that's a group conscience decision, and I think that you got to live with the results of that. Personally, am I in favor of it? No. But I know there's cases where it's happening. And then there's always this big discussion about you can't change the big book. Yes, you can. The only thing you cannot change under these warranties is the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and the 6 warranties, and Article 12 of the Conference Charter, which in essence is the 6 warranties. Okay? You can change the big book. You can put cartoons in it if you want. It can happen if the conference is willing to do it. And the big book, the first 164 pages, is in the public domain. We all know that. We get that. But